You're listening to 94.1 KPFA, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online worldwide at kpfa.org.
I want to thank all you folks out there at Radio Lande for choosing to hang out with me. My name is Avacha. This is Bebop, Kubop, and the Musical Truth. And what can I say? I'm going to try and play some great music, have wonderful guests here. And don't you dare turn the dial. If you move away from your radio or your speakers, just go to the phone and call everybody. Tell them this is where to have it, right here at kpfa.org or 94.1 if you're in the Bay Area. There's going to be a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful reading coming up this weekend featuring John Curl and Jack Foley and his partner. And they're going to be having a big book party over at one of my favorite places, the beautiful Bird and Beckett Books, which is on Chenery at Diamond in San Francisco. It's about a block in here from the Glen Park BART station. There's buses that go right there. There is no reason to miss this. And to make sure you don't have John Curl captured here in the control booth, we couldn't get Jack Foley, but you can get him every week here on the air and check him out. So, John, let's talk about who is John Curl? What was little John doing, and how'd you get into all this writing, et cetera, in the first place?
Well, I grew up in New York City and partially in New Jersey also. And I got into... my father worked in the post office. We're like a working class family on the fringes of a more upscale neighborhood, actually just so much on the fringes that the school couldn't decide whether my block, my house, was in the school district or not. So if they had made the other decision, I would have gone on a different track in New York City. I got into writing, simply because when I was in the sixth or seventh grade, I think, a teacher came up to me and said, I guess we had done some class assignments of poetry. She said, John, you're a poet. Keep on writing. So since I really didn't have any much of a career plan, a career trajectory, and that's what it stuck with me, that all I need is a pencil and a piece of paper to write. And even if I don't have that, I can just make it up in my mind and memorize it. So I didn't need anything. So coming from where I was in society, that was, that was the equal opportunity.
Well, the world is a better place for it. So you and Jack have these new books out, and we've got this reading coming up. And the book that you, I just had this double cataract surgery, so I had friends help me read it by reading it for me. So, and let me hear it. It's about the New York during a very strange time and a group of kids who decide to turn it around. We want to talk about it.
Sure. The name of the novel is called The Outlaws of Maroon. And for the about the first 100 pages, you might think it was a kid's novel, but it really is not a kid's novel. It's an adult novel about the world of children and the world of adults in conflict. And the children are coming from working class families. They're the main characters, and they're all of a multicultural background. They're all kind of outsiders. They don't fit into the social structure of the neighborhood or the school, so they get together like outsiders do in almost anywhere. And in this case, they form a group and they try to create their own world in response to a world, the adult world that has failed them, that they do not want to be part of the adult world. So they find an abandoned room under a building. And they turn it into a kind of a clubhouse, a gang house, gang clubhouse, a hideout. And they create their own world there. And little by little, because this is taking place during the McCarthy era, and the McCarthyism is descending on their school, and so they are drawn into that atmosphere of repression. And that's where the novel starts from.
Okay, and this reading that you have coming up with Jack Foley, And I don't want to mispronounce her name, so I'm going to let you say it for me.
Oh, Sangye.
Thank you. Let's talk about it. This is all going to be happening. It says, Writers Painting Their Voices, Thursday the 30th, Burton Beckett Books and Records, 653 Chenery. As I say, it's right near Diamond, right around the corner from the Glen Park BART station, 6:30 to 8 p.m. in the evening. It's a really beautiful, beautiful spiritual place to get to do anything. I love the place.
Yes, it's a wonderful place.
And tell folks about why they should come to this. I mean, I, you know, come out on a Thursday night. I think it's a great place to be myself. But
well, Jack Foley and I started getting connected in the early 1980s when we were both publishing books of poetry through the same publisher, Mother's Hand Press. And then we worked together for a number of years on Mary Rudge's cable television show called Star Rover from Alameda Cable. And then finally we worked in Penn Oakland. So we were, you know, on the board of Penn Oakland for, you know, for quite a number of years. So, but in all this time, we've read in groups, and we also, there was some plays that we put on. We each put on one of our plays. But this really is the first time that Jack and I have ever read just one-on-one. So this is a little special. It's kind of an old homecoming, and we both have a new book out, and it should be a great time.
Well, I'm begging on some of you and Jack's poetry. Why don't you give a little snippet of the book for the folks?
Okay, I'll read them. I'll read an excerpt or a couple of excerpts from it.
Sorry about it. We had an open door. We had to get rid of that.
Mom stuck her head out of the kitchen. Hi, honey. She looked stressed. They both came into the living room. Gabe didn't like the look on their faces. Daddy and I need to talk to you. About what? They sat on the sofa. Come here, Dad said. He stood in front of them. They both seemed fidgety, like they didn't know what they wanted to say. Finally, Dad began. I don't know how much you know about this. A lot of bad things have been happening. Mom cut in. Not at home, out in the world. Do they talk to you about these things in school? Dad asked. No. Well, they should. That's what school is for. They talk about stuff sometimes, Gabe said, to be agreeable. Good, Mom replied. What do they talk about? Different things, I don't know. Well, Dad fidgeted. What we want to tell you is, he just trailed off. Mom said, don't ever repeat anything outside the house, anything you hear somebody say at home. That's right, Dad jumped in. Not at school, not anywhere outside the house. Anything you hear anybody say at home, they're just saying it to the family, and it's not anybody else's business. Mom continued. So never repeat anything you hear at home to anybody outside the house, at school, anywhere. Do you understand? Yes. What do you understand? Gabe didn't say anything. Never repeat outside anything you hear at home, Mom repeated. I won't. Mom leaned toward him and said, almost in a whisper, we're not going to maroon. What do you mean? We're not going this summer. We're not going? Maroon is gone. It's gone. They're taking it away from Grandpa. They're taking it away from us. They're taking the land away. They're taking it all away. We probably can't ever go there again. Why? They're giving it to somebody else. They're going to knock it all down with bulldozers and build a mall there. A what? A shopping center. Why? Because they can. It's hard to explain. They're doing it because they can. It's gone. Maroon is gone. That's just the way it is. That's just the way it is. We just have to accept it. Tell Henry we're not going. I know you two were so looking forward to it. I'm sorry. At first, Gabe couldn't wrap his head around it. Maroon was gone. It was like saying, the sky is gone. He slunk back to his room, confused. Late that night, Gabe woke again to the sound of muffled voices in the living room. Grandpa Benjo was out there with them. Gabe stole to the door. Mom said, you don't need to be involved with those people. Those people are putting themselves on the line. But you don't need to be involved. Do you want to be a dead hero? You're retired now. I'm not involved. They're just old friends now. What if they took away your retirement? They can't. That McCarthy's just blowing air. If FDR was still alive, him and his goons would still be hiding in some drain pipe. They're coming after you. That's why they're taking the land. Maroon's got nothing to do with this. The land is just business as usual to those bloodsuckers. We're going to knock their blocks off. It's more than just a coincidence, Mom said. They're going after everybody. What if they go after the whole family? We could be evicted. They can't do that, Benjo replied curtly. Dad, who had been sitting quietly, burst out. For crying out loud, don't you understand? Everybody is being blacklisted. I could lose my job. Mom said, we could all wind up on the street. Do you eat to live, or do you live to eat? Benjo replied. So that's a section from the book. And I'll read one more section here, which will later on in the book. And these are all fourth graders, the children here. Elke whispered to Ari, are we going to die here? Maybe. Elke entwined her fingers with hers. I don't want to die. This is the end, Kelly said. They got us. Rocco said, Kelly, do the worm song. That's not even funny, Kelly said. Yes, it is. It's very funny, Rocco said. You're always shooting your mouth about how much you want to be dead. Now here's your big chance. How does it go? He continued in a sing-song voice. The worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. They eat your guts and spit it out. Shut up, Rocco, Kelly said. Maybe I changed my mind. Ari put her arms around Kelly. We love you, Kelly. Elke wrapped her arms around the two of them. I love you both. I love you too, Elke, Ari said. Ari, Elke, and Kelly hugged. One by one, the others joined in until they were all hugging each other in a circle. So what are we going to do? Henry looked around. Kelly's right. This is the end. What does everybody want to do? They probably won't kill us if we just walk out there. Anybody got a white flag? No one responded. Finally, Ari said, you can do that if you want to, Henry. I don't want to, but what else can we do? She said, all I know is I didn't do this just for nothing. We didn't all do this just for nothing. Let them come in and get us. Henry said, I feel like I got you all into this. Ari said, you didn't get us into this. We got you into it. Henry said, I just want to get you all out of here, okay? You're my family. I don't want them to hurt you. Ari said, I'd rather be dead here than go back to my uncle. I'm not going back. I'm staying with Ari, Elke said. Gabe said, if Ari and Elke are going to stay, I'm staying too. Rocco said, I'm in. Jack said, I'm in. Kelly said, "You're all my family, too. I'm in." Henry said, "Then we stick together, no matter what." Nobody said anything for a while. Sirens in the distance. Everyone except Henry sprinted to the lookout tower, crowded onto the platform around the two sets of slits in the bricks overlooking the highway. Gabe's shoulder still twinged, but he didn't pay it much mind. Henry hobbled along in the rear and pulled and pushed himself slowly up the ladder until he was now on the platform with the others. In the distance, down the highway, under the bridge, Gabe saw flashing red lights, police cars, and vans hurtling toward them. Rocco said, "Here they come." Henry said, "Everybody grab your signal mirror." Gabe felt his pocket, where he always kept it. His little mirror was there. Across the river, the sun was preparing to set behind the Palisades, and beams of sunlight burst through the fiery clouds. "The sun's at a good angle. Everybody keep your head back so they don't see your face," Henry said. "Watch the angle of the sun. Get your mirror ready. Everybody ready? Here they come." Sirens, flashing lights, police cars speeding toward them from under the bridge. "Now," Henry shouted. Sunbeam blasts of glaring light bounced off their mirrors and hit the windshields. "Got 'em," Jack yelled. The first drivers stomped their brakes. The cars behind plowed into them. A police van spun across the highway. One by one, each of the others ricocheted and plowed into the one before. "I hope nobody got hurt," Elke said. "Now they're really going to be mad," Kelly exclaimed.
Wow, okay. So you have a little kid army there.
Yes, a little kid army.
Well, those were strange times, and one of the things that stood out for me is when the teachers start handing out these little folders, pads for them to take notes on their parents and everybody. That was, anyway, folks that are from this generation absolutely know nothing about all that, although it looks like we might be getting pretty close to it again.
Well, unfortunately, we're getting into that kind of a situation.
So tell folks a little bit about what's going to happen on Thursday, and maybe give us a poem of yours and Jack's. So get a little taste. I want you to make the folks want to be out there on Thursday night.
Okay. Well, I'll start with a poem of mine, then I'll read a little of Jack's, and then go back to something of mine. This is called "The Lake of Our Emergence." What is a word? A meaningful vibration. In the beginning was the word, and the word was creation. Rock, air, fire, water, oak leaves, ocean waves, tropical jungles, oscillates, gasps of ecstasy, groans of love. We look into each other's eyes as we pass in the street. We don't say a word, but we understand the meaningful vibrations beyond words or before words, both before and beyond words at the same time. All living things, all non-living things, music, waterfalls on this planet and beyond, flocks of small birds in the early morning, crickets at dusk, the gurgle of a baby, the voices in a singing brook. What are words? Meaningful vibrations. In the beginning was the word, and the word was creation. We walk these slippery banks along the lake of our emergence, the center pole of our forest, our muddy port of entry into this world, our place of origin, our origin of place. We step from the lake into the place we belong. Only briefly do we walk here today, learning how to be indigenous. These restless streets we pace, where our unborn great-grandchildren play. Breezes blow wavelets rolling toward the far shore, while around us hushed fields of poppies grow, and beneath our feet rocks melt and caverns of magma flow. The uniforms, face shields, nightsticks, separating brother from daughter, sister from mother, do not separate illusion from delusion. All truth is recreated each morning when a small bird peeks out of a nest hidden in a lilac bush by the water's edge. To be able to walk here since the world began is a gift of inexpressible joy. Who gets to claim this wild, watery homeland as their own? Who gets to call it home? Every place is the center of the world, and everywhere is our place of origin.
All right.
And now I'll read from When Sleep Comes, Shillelagh Songs by Jack Foley. The wings, the river, the wind, the strangeness of ashes that hold nothing but memory. What's left of the dear thing whose hand you once held and who held yours? The strangeness that what had been so solid and lodged in the heart should vanish. This is the word evanescence. These are the wings, the river, the wind. Angelos. I have always wanted to believe in angels, always looked for traces of their wings, their beauty and swiftness, birds and humans, messengers, especially the guardians, those assigned particularly to you. How lovely to have an invisible friend who looks after you and moves you just an inch when the brick heading directly for your head is about to fall. I have always wanted to believe in angels and do at some level. Do you know the word eudaimonia? It means happiness, but is by etymology good demons, good spirits. Angels are such. The man who asked me for money yesterday, but who looked at me with such searching intensity, as if we shared a secret, was perhaps my good demon. For, according to ancient doctrine, demons too do the work of God. Demons too do the work of God. For, according to ancient doctrine, was perhaps my good demon, as if we shared a secret, but who looked at me with such searching intensity yesterday, the man who asked me for money. Angels are such. Good demons, good spirits. It means happiness, but is by etymology. Do you know the word eudaimonia? In angels and do at some level. I have always wanted to believe it is about to fall. When the brick heading directly for your head, just an inch, who looks after you and moves you, how lovely to have an invisible friend, those assigned particularly to you, especially the guardians, birds and humans, messengers, their beauty and swiftness, traces of their wings, in angels always looked for, I have always wanted to believe.
All right.
I'll read another poem of mine.
Well, he's looking for that poem. Don't forget, this is going to be Thursday the 30th. Burton Beckett Books and Records, 653 Chenery at Diamond in San Francisco, 6:30 to 8 p.m. John Curl and Jack Foley, and say her name again for me.
Sangye Lam.
Okay.
Sangye Lam.
I will eventually get it, because I really don't want to brutalize it, because I want to get her on the show one of these times, too. But anyway, okay, go for it.
Conjuring realignment. Here we are at this blind end of this blank alley cycle, recycle of dying and living, at these last rasping gasps of what they flatteringly call civilization. We've reached it in our lifetimes. Lucky us, this bitter end of this global empire of abuse, money hurtling off the vertiginous cliff of destiny, spiraling into this sheer descent into chaos. Why even bother? They're hopeless. It's just their second nature now, gluttony and aggression. Pig eat dog. It's in their DNA. They've been abusing each other and desecrating our sweet world ever since before prehistory began. It's in their oh-so-human psyche, so driven and accustomed to be the alpha of the food chain, the summit predators, binge-gorging until they puke, the blood of the world smeared all over their chins, and even then, still relentlessly packing it in. They're hopeless. So why even bother? Why even bother to write this poem? Who cares about a poem in a time of civilization collapse? Lo, the circle is drawn around us. The candle is lit. The power of water enters inside. Let there be the illusion of time. Let up be up and down be down. Let down be down. Let down be up. In this time of civilization collapse, unleash the powers in ancient sounds, in ancient words, ancient runes. Unleash the powers in ancient spells, incantations, invocations, divinations, conjurations. Now, now, now is the ancient boiling point. Now, the ancient breaking point. Now, the ancient flashpoint of rebellion. Dark forces, be gone. Out, return to darkness. Be gone, all negative energy. Dark forces, gone. Lo, the circle is drawn around us. Leave our home unharmed. Now is the dew point of realignment, of healing. Behold, the clouds part. The voices speak. This does not belong to you. This is our great-grandchildren's ocean. These are their forests, their homes, their streets, their food, their flowers. Dark forces, be gone, out. Return to darkness. Let there be sharing. Let there be shining. Let there be luminescence.
Thursday, January 30th. 6:30 to 8 p.m. It's free and open to the public. Writers painting their voices. And it's all going to be at Burden Beckett Books and Records, 653 Chenery at Diamond, San Francisco. Tell folks about why they absolutely have to be there.
We're going to have a really great time. Jack Foley and Sanye and myself and hopefully a lot of our friends. And it'll be a great evening. And we'd love to see you there.
Okay, and I don't know if Jack's program has been preempted because of this thing that's going on. Is he going to be on this week? Are you going to be on the show?
I don't know.
I'm sure you would be. Jack is one of the bricks in this building, so you can catch him every week here at the station. But anyway, because I know they're doing live broadcasts of this, whatever this thing is. So anyway. I want to thank you for coming on down once again. Writers painting their voices, Thursday the 30th, Burden Beckett Books and Records, 653 Chenery at Diamond, San Francisco, 6:30 to 8 p.m. And that's John Curl and Jack Foley and Sanye Land. Did I say it right? Yes. Thank you. And thank you for coming on down.
Thank you so much, Ivanchuk.